Hello, IMRO podcast listener, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. It's Danny Carroll here, recording this intro on a truly scaldy, dreek, damp day in February 2024, but looking back on a sunnier time, August in fact, where me, myself and I travelled to the Treaty City Limerick and met some of the musicians performing at Feilín Agraíonna Festival 2023. Feilín Agraíonna is a free festival of emerging and experimental music, entirely volunteer-led with a DIY perspective. The festival celebrates art and community in an attempt to provoke moments of joy in spaces and places across Limerick City. And from experiencing the festival last summer, I can confirm that they very much succeed in generating joy across the town. I spent 3 days at Feilín Agraíonna and it was definitely one of my highlights of the year. This year's festival takes place 23rd to 25th of August if you'd like to save the dates. I had the pleasure of speaking to some of the performers that weekend, so namely we'll be hearing from the harpist Maeve McKenna, lo-fi singer-songwriter Robbie Stickland, synthwave artist Cool Girl, and the indie rock trio Search Results. Sometimes it was a little bit noisy. I was recording conversations on the street, often there was music playing nearby, but hopefully that gives you a sense of the atmosphere of that weekend. Before we get into all that, to put things in context, we're going to hear from two of the organisers of Feilín Agraíonna, Chris Quigley and Dermot O'Shea.
My name is Chris Quigley, I'm a musician and I'm the technical director of Feilín Agraíonna.
My name is Dermot O'Shea, I'm the chairperson of Feilín Agraíonna and I do some technical and booking stuff as well.
Tell me about the start of Feilín Agraíonna.
There were a load of us in like two different collectives, DOILK and Lower Your Expectations. Myself and Chris and a few others were in DOILK and we were doing kind of left of field weird bands, you know, punk, weird jazz punk stuff, just everything really that we thought was weird enough to get people interested. And Jack was running more like electronic nights, but still quite left of field. And yeah, I guess a few of the lads just had an idea to throw a summer party and eventually developed into, why don't we try and do a festival? And yeah.
I think an important point to qualify that is that none of us at that time could afford to go to festivals, and Limerick would always die an awful death in the middle of the summer because it was still kind of the tail end of the recession. So like all the students would move and town was incredibly boring for 3 months. So it was literally just like us begging our musician friends from around the country to come amuse us for a weekend.
It was obviously something of a success and you decided to do it the next year. Has it gotten bigger each year? Are you kind of reaching a bit further as it progresses?
It's grown well outside of any manageable proportion in my estimation, looking at things. But it's great. Yeah, I mean, it was tiny the first year. It's basically just our friends, really. It felt like quite intimate and like other people outside our group. And it's grown then gradually, like, you know, last year there was whole audiences where I didn't recognize anyone and that was kind of surreal. I suppose we were very community-based in our original kind of attitude and philosophy.
Yeah, I think 2019 would have been the first year where, yeah, the second year run of it, where we're like, oh wow, this is kind of kicking off a bit and there's a hunger for it. It has been getting gradually bigger. We're trying not to let it get too big because we just don't want that. It's not really what we're aiming for, because we want to have fun as well. Like, we don't want to be just some burnt out festival promoters.
So Feilín Agraíonna is a free festival, and how many spaces are you taking over in Limerick City?
Including, I think it's streets. It's hard to. It's like five venues.
I think it's five venues.
And streets.
Yeah, or maybe it's six now with Ormston.
Yeah,
yeah.
So eight spaces if we want to be like, accurate.
Maybe if you can just kind of elaborate on the decision to keep it free and how you've managed to do that.
Yeah. Well, the first year, just to give it kind of context, the first year, we went to the venues and they were just pubs that all of us as a group were in all the time. And we're like, how does this sound? We had no funding or anything. And they're like, yeah, we'll throw you a couple hundred euro. Like, you bring people in, buy beer. And yeah, like, knowing that we could do that for free, like, obviously at the expense of the pubs, but they're probably making loads of profit, so it's fine. But knowing that we could do that and not have to charge in. So that was always a big part. Like, after 2019, we were like, yeah, we have to keep it like this. People really want this.
The free access thing, I think, was always a point that, like, that music shouldn't be gatekept and parties shouldn't be. And festivals are just parties. So that was always a big philosophical point for us, was that you could go to fail out with your ass in your back pocket and still have a good time.
And this is the first year you're actually closing down streets for it, right?
Yes, we tried to close as many ones outside venues as we could. The only one we couldn't get was Thomas Street for now. But yeah, that's cool, because last year, I mean, the issue, I suppose, was we were trying to keep crowds off the road. And it's nice to have that thing where, like, the public kind of take ownership of a space and it's not just for cars the whole time. So, like, I kind of just even enjoy conceptually, even if we didn't have music outside, I'd just be like, yeah, just close the road because people are having fun and there's no need for 15 SUVs to be parked on it at all times, you know?
Sure. Why do it? Why go to the effort of all this thing? It's a huge undertaking and you're all volunteers. You mentioned the love of it. But yeah, do you have any thoughts on what keeps you doing it?
I always think that I'd love to go to Fail and Agrena. So I'm like, it's good to provide that.
I think I just always put huge weight in the idea of facilitating artists. And I think things like Fela, there are stages at festivals that do really good work and try to put on lots of interesting acts and like not just kind of like pander for ticket sales or whatever. But I think with the fact that we have no profit motive, we can go really outlandish with it. And like, I think it's good for culture. I just think that should happen.
I suppose we should contextualize as well. I'm speaking to you the night before it all kicks off. So how are you feeling on the cusp of 3 days of taking over the city and putting on events?
Yeah, still a bit nervous. It's one of those things where you just have to go into it head first. Like, it's just going to happen. And we can be nervous if we want, but once you're in it, it is a rush. Like, it's kind of a thrill.
I suppose, like, Jimin maybe hasn't mentioned that he's also technically involved in the festival, so he'll also be doing stupid 16-hour days. So at this point, if he wasn't really stressed and nervous, I would be worried. So that's just the way it is, but it's like a total adrenaline run for us for 3 days straight. And then by Sunday night, you're just in smithereens. But it's really fun, and it's really cathartic, the whole arc. It's, like, lovely.
Do me a favor and introduce yourselves.
I am Jack, I play the drums.
I'm Adam, I play the bass.
I'm Fionn, I play the guitar.
And the name of the band?
The band is called Search Results.
Where are you playing today, gentlemen?
We're playing outside the Commercial Bar at Fail and Agrena in Limerick on Castle Street.
Tell me about the album that's coming out 15th of September. I'm going to edit that hesitation out. You better believe it. Tell me about your debut album.
It's called The Information Blip, or it's called Information Blip, no the. We recorded it with Dara Hansard from the UFO in his home studio. And it's 15 tracks that we've been playing over the last 2 years of gigging. And finally getting them down on tape. I don't have to be right. I just cannot be wrong. If I can't last the night, I can't last for long. I just can't catch the time. Always late at the door. Cast a trap like a mine.
And in terms of getting them down on tape, did you track it live, or was there a lot of overdubs, or was it a lengthy process? Tell me what went into it.
For the most part, we were doing like a live take, and then we would overdub our separate parts over it. For two of the songs, we recorded them at home. Three of the songs. We recorded them at home.
In Unit 1.
We lived right around the corner on Ebony Stairs. And
I liked it. How did the band start? Tell me a little origin story.
Yeah, well, we all met in college in BIM in 2019. I was in a class with Jack. We were in the same home class, and I remember him kind of getting up on stage, playing with Brick Nasty, before Brick Nasty, I think, became Brick Nasty, and I thought that Brick Nasty, this is no diss on Brick Nasty, I keep saying Brick Nasty, I thought he was going to claim Jack, and I don't know, I felt like we had something in common, and then, I don't know, Jack asked another guy to play drums, and then one day I asked Adam to play bass. Eventually that drummer left and Jack changed over and playing guitar.
And now I'm playing drums.
How new are you to the drums, or have you always been doing
I've always played them. I'm probably better at them than guitar. I don't know why I started doing that in the first place, but I'm glad I'm doing this now.
Were you both studying guitar? Because in BIM you have to kind of pick your specialist area of focus. You're all guitar guys.
Yeah.
Learning how to shred and tap and...
Shredding,
yeah? Okay. How did you find that experience? Did it allow you to take yourself seriously and level up as a musician?
I don't think so. I was a bass player originally, so it was weird for me to start playing guitar in a band. You know, I was used to writing bass lines, and like going to class playing guitar, I definitely felt like, why am I bending a string? You know, that's weird. I don't know, yeah, I don't know. I suppose it gave me a lot more confidence, though, yeah, for me.
Part of the formation was a frustration with our natural instruments. Maybe not Adam, because we kind of forced them to play bass. But me and Fionn, anyway, were very frustrated with our positions as bassists and guitarists, even. I think that might be a big part of it.
Conversation that made you realize actually we would be good at playing music together?
Devo is playing right now, so that was kind of one thing which was never like touched on in the course. So what they were teaching us in college was kind of just like everything I didn't want to do on the guitar. So when the lads asked me to play bass, I was like, oh yeah, like it's something different to do, so just for the crack. And then they kind of we actually planned on doing it for an exam.
Yeah, Parquet Courts kind of brought us together in a way.
We did a cover of Parquet Courts. And like they didn't really, we did it as an exam, and nobody really went for it, and they didn't really enjoy it that much. But we loved it, so we just kind of kept it up.
The little boy that I'd assigned at the foot of the Rocky Mountains, where once he seemed small, at least he seemed so. He made his way through gates and gardens, and much he couldn't count. The furthest path goes, he does not know. The sign had missed a letter C, so he was intrigued what the top of this mountain will hold.
COVID had a lot to do with how the songs came about too, I think. We were just kind of sitting on them, and we were like, well, for me, I came up from Sligo just wanting to be in a band. I was in all these other things, like I was playing a lot of in like this jazz orchestra, playing a lot of bass, you know, with a different idea in my head. And it was just the excitement of getting into a band with people, and just I was lucky enough to kind of find two people that would be my best friends in it, like not so long. It didn't take too long for that to happen.
You said COVID helped kind of cement or solidify the band. How do you guys write songs?
It's different every time, and it has changed since COVID stopped. It used to be me and Fionn would separately write a majority of the song and then bring it to each other and workshop it from there, with about like 80-90% of it being done already. But now a lot of it gets done in the practice room. Like Fionn will write a lot of sections for his songs and we kind of cobble them together, and he only has a guitar part, so me and Adam kind of work around that. With mine, I don't really go in with anything other than lyrics and a key signature generally, and we kind of work off that and spitball ideas for a couple hours.
I'm really knocked out by the wealth of imagination that's in your work. Like it's an embarrassment of riches, just the out-of-the-box thinking. I don't know, you do the unexpected thing with your songs. How improvised is that in terms of live performance, or how written is that stuff?
While the rest of us rot on the stone, at least we won't be alone.
Probably... we have like a couple of songs where we just kind of have a section where we let ourselves kind of go on for a bit and see where it goes from there. But for the most part, it's like what we play is what we play in the rehearsal room, and it's fairly rehearsed down to the point.
Also 90% of it is trying to get a laugh out of each other as well, changing things on each other. That keeps it fresh too.
There's something in, I think, like the dynamic of a trio as well that's really important. Like everybody sort of has to play lead and rhythm, and only one of you doing that instrument. Obviously at one point you guys were a four-piece. Did things click in a different way when it was just the three of you in the room?
It was okay as a four-piece. Our old drummer was very good, but I think the way Fionn plays the guitar is really busy. He's quite a loud player, and I didn't really want to change that, so me being the other guitarist was kind of redundant. So I'm kind of glad that I'm drumming now, because he fills it out enough anyway, just as the one player, so I don't think we need anything else going on there. We got the synth now, but that kind of plays a different role.
It's also very, like, I don't know, I was talking to Adam about this recently. We don't really stress out too much about the instrumentation a lot of the time. It's really forgetting about that and thinking about one whole finished thing that people are listening to, and when it's live, they're watching, you know. And I always find it weird when there's attention drawn to, you know, the instrument, because, you know, I don't feel like a guitar player really, you know. And I'm loving playing the synth and like kind of letting go of that, because I feel like I'm stuck in this one position, and being able to kind of, you know, move around and explore different things is kind of like, is more interesting to me. I, you know, it's really about the song, and I know a lot of the time you can't really hear the lyrics, but that's also like, it's kind of more what I think about it.
You're not sticking around for the weekend. Is there anything else that you've seen thus far at Fela? Any thoughts on the festival itself that you'd like to share with the people at home?
I mean, the whole vibe of the whole festival is just so lovely, and like everybody's just so nice and outgoing, and everybody's just really cool. So
since you've been out gigging, and maybe it's been a couple of years now you've been doing gigs, have you found a sense of community? Do you feel like you've found your people, that you are like-minded?
Yes, definitely. But mostly in the other bands that we've been playing with, that we've formed a good group with a lot of people who, many of them are here this weekend, like the Unstuck Boys are here, Robbie Stickland, Lifts, all those kind of guys. Huge group of people, and everyone comes to each other's gigs, which is really nice. And then anyone else who wants to tag along is fantastic too.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
My name's Izzy. I am Cool Girl.
Where are you playing today?
I'm playing in Crew Brew on Thomas Street. Oh, there's a hen. There's a hen.
Hello, hello.
Good woman now. Fair play to you. There's a lot of spirit anyway. Did you just get here today?
Yeah, I just got here. Doing a little day trip, road trip. Stopped in the Barack Obama Plaza, Bazzy Plazzy, of course.
Do you feel acclimatized to Fela and Grena?
Yeah, it's pretty nice vibes straight off the bat. It's just a street party, hanging out with loads of like-minded people.
What's your plan for the performance? What's the setup? Tell us.
Well, I used to have a tape machine player, but I don't have it, so I was writing some songs on the way down in the car. So, it'll be fresh for tonight.
I read somewhere that you're like, I like working with the restriction of 24 hours to like make something and have it finished. So this is a similar, like, the immediacy of the idea is the best thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with technology, it's great. There's pros and cons of it. With technology, there's like a blank canvas, so there's so much that you can do at once, and that's hard. But then if you can also restrict yourself, it makes you more creative in the sense that, oh, okay, I have a time limit, and so pushes it.
How has the project sort of evolved since you started it?
Well, I was in Bitch Falcon, the band, and it just took a long time to get ideas together. So I started it as just a solo thing to get going a bit quicker, and then I let it rest for a long time, and now I'm just like really anxious to get back out and performing, so I made it into a live project.
I suppose when you were first doing this, you know, I met you a couple of years ago and you were talking about the project and like trying saxophone on it and like really experimenting with home recording, and gigs weren't happening as much at that time. So there was like a bit of distance where you were able to really figure out what you wanted to do before you performed. Was it a big jump to sort of figure out how am I going to present this to people live?
I think so. I think with the electronic performance, it's like there's a bit of smoke and mirrors involved. And so being accustomed to that is like something that, you know, I went to Beyond the Pale last year and I saw Boy Harsher, and like they're a big influence, and I met the guy who's in it, and I was like saying about what do you do live, because, and he was like, oh, straight off the bat he was like, oh, do you have laptop fear? I'm like, yes, I have laptop fear. He's like I've seen the most punk gigs and the best gigs I've ever, and just laptop, so like just relax, enjoy it, and like it's great to hear it live. So yeah, it's like a mixture of all live synths and then the laptop as well.
So there is that element of spontaneity and not really knowing what's going to happen until it happens.
Yeah, exactly. And like today, you know, I didn't have one of my instruments, so I had to just ride it on the way down. And so, yeah, I think I like restrictions.
Do you approach playing at a festival different to a normal gig?
I think, you know, with a festival, you kind of need to have it a bit more, maybe intense, a bit more saturated into a like concise thing. You want to kind of show who you are with that. I think with like gigging and touring, you can kind of just like be a bit more relaxed about it. I think with a festival, though, you kind of want to show what you have best to offer.
Put out a tune, Silver Light, recently. What inspired that, and tell me what went into making the song?
I wrote that song, and I actually realised it was one of the riffs that we had tried for Bitch Falcon, and it was completely subconscious. I was like, when I wrote it, I was like, oh, I actually wrote this.
I wrote this before.
I plagiarised myself. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. I love the like this piece of music is just waiting to come out of me, and like I need to serve this idea. So obviously it's a completely different context to Bitch Falcon. That must have been pretty funny realizing that.
Yeah, and it was nice to see that it came out naturally as it was obviously supposed to be. It was supposed to be electronic, it was supposed to be kind of heavy synth stuff, and it didn't work with guitars, but it did really work with synths. So
What's planned for the future, Lizzie? Tell me more.
In the future, I have an EP coming out. It's coming out in November. So I'll be releasing another single at the end of the month and a couple more, and then I'm going to put out a cassette and play a headline gig in Dublin.
Anything else you're looking forward to for the weekend? You're going to be hanging out?
I have to do a little road trip tonight, so Supermax is probably what I'm most excited for.
The simple things in life sometimes. Yeah.
And you can't have Supermax in Dublin. You have to have Supermax in it. Like,
it doesn't taste the same.
No.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell the people at home? Anything we should be knowing about Cool Girl?
No. That's it.
All right. Sam. Here we go. We're recording. Well, I'm just going to ask you some really dumb questions to get things in your own words. So maybe you could tell me who you are and where we are.
My name is Robbie Stickland. I'm a lo-fi indie rock legend from Dublin, and I'm here at Fail in the Grain Festival.
When me and the world first met, it was fun to
where are you playing today, Robbie?
At the beautiful Commercial, Limerick. It's a great venue. Downstairs is the Record Room, but I will not be playing there. They've set up a stage outdoors, and I'm going to play there.
Do you approach a set like this different when you're at a festival such as this?
I think the only thing I'd be looking out for is getting too cold. If I get too cold, my limbs won't work so well, and I won't be able to play all that well. And then, of course, there's always the worry about the weather. Last night was very stormy. Luckily, the weather has pulled through. It's dry. There's a bit of wind, but I think it's going to be fine.
You played at Phelan and Grena last year as part of the band Ban Rian. What was that experience like?
It was great, yeah. I'd never heard of Phelan and Grena before. Roisin, the singer, got the email, and we agreed to do it. So I went in blind. We turned up on the Saturday. I think we played at 12 p.m. very early. And I was just shocked by how many people turned up, first of all, and like how many people knew about it already. And then the layout of the festival I found very interesting. I guess nothing clashes. I think this year one or two things might clash, but last year nothing clashed. And so you could technically go to every single gig, which I thought was amazing. That meant every gig had a really good crowd at it. I thought that ethos was great. It was a very positive experience. And so I was very excited to do this year with my own project. Time to say goodbye to my old self. Thanks for all of your help.
You've been down since last night. Do you feel acclimatized? You're on Phelan and Grena time.
Yeah. I don't know. You just you get into that festival headspace of like you're floating around and you're not too worried about, I don't know. It kind of becomes its own. Festivals are like their own ecosystem for a few days, I think. So yeah, I would say I'm in that mode now.
Tell me about future plans for Robbie Stickland's artist.
I'm recording a project at the moment. I've been doing it in my room on my 4-track, and I hope to get that out in the coming months. There are songs that I've got together for the last year or so. So yeah, I've just been like slowly recording them, and I've been able to have a burst of recording in the last few weeks, which has been great. I love DIY recording. I love doing it myself. I feel like just doing it completely myself without like a lot of technical knowledge about recording kind of turns the whole process into its own instrument and kind of puts a bend in it in a certain way that I enjoy. I'm finishing up that, and hopefully we'll have that out in the next few months.
You're saying, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're not the kind of person that goes like watching instructional videos on how to do this a certain way. You're kind of more going in blind and just seeing what it reveals to you and trusting your ears a bit more.
No, I do watch instructional videos. I find it's more, I'm not very good at like sitting down and watching a really long video to like soak in all the information. It's more like if I run into a specific hurdle when I'm recording, I might go onto YouTube and be like, okay, how do I fix this? How do I make the bass sound good? Where should I put my mic when I'm recording this? And there's loads of good stuff on YouTube, but I don't have any like formal training in recording or anything like that. Don't leave me hanging on.
Starting to get a little bit more noisy, getting closer to rock o'clock here. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to over the weekend?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Julia Louise Knife Fist. She'll be later tonight. Laurie Shaw, I've heard some good things. I believe he's going to be on the same stage as myself just a bit later. I'm excited for the secret headliner on Sunday. I'm excited to see Maeve McKenna. I believe she's playing at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And actually, I'm just looking forward to doing the gig and then just getting very drunk afterwards. I love playing live, but also it's like when before the gig, you're just kind of always thinking about the gig, and then when it's over, you're like, all right, we can hang out now.
The weight's off your shoulders at that point.
Yes.
Cool. Anything else you want to tell the people at home?
I love you.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thanks, Danny.
Do I believe in that songs are lived in? Yes. I think like songs are like our homes though, you know, like, and that's, you know, probably why I'm drawn to singing folk songs, because, you know, they're beautiful places that you could climb inside and you redecorate them maybe or something, but they're definitely gorgeous little constructions, yeah, that you can climb inside. My name is Maeve McKenna and I'm a harpist and a singer and a general noise maker.
Did you grow up with people passing that down to you?
I wouldn't say so, no. In some ways, yes. Like I think I was given music in a really beautiful way, and that I had amazing teachers. Like I primarily learned music classically. And I worked with kind of the same people from a young age. Like I started on piano and I had an incredible teacher until I was 18. And I just feel like that kind of guidance is a really unique relationship.
What age, you said up until 18, so like what age were you that you started with the piano with this one teacher?
Oh, I would have been like 4.
Right.
Yeah.
14 years of guidance.
Yeah, yeah, which is mad, you know, and it's a really unique relationship. And as a teacher now, like I've gone through years where I've really felt like being a teacher was a part of my identity. Being in that role for other people then is really, it's a really powerful, responsible position that I don't take lightly at all, which is kind of why I took a big step back from it, because I had to kind of throw myself back into child mode to make new things, I felt. And yeah, there was a level of like, I can't be responsible for anyone right now. I've got to be a messer. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. When you say like jump back into child mode, that's like find a sense of playfulness and a sense that's like not really restricted by being the director or the guide. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose just also finding a sense of play, like literally finding a sense of play. I think it's a really indulgent form of therapy for me to perform improvised music in front of people. It's incredibly indulgent and I really appreciate people listening and I hope to be worthy of them listening, but it's a matter of kind of survival, because I have to find a way to live outside of structure in a way, because I really was so grounded in structure for so long that I hit a point where I realized I was, you know, graduated from a classical music degree and I didn't know what my own voice was, you know? So I've been playing music for like 25 years and I was like, but someone had asked me to sing a song and I would choke, you know, I would forget anything I'd ever known. So I needed to completely deconstruct things, and that happened for me during lockdown. So yeah, what's happened since has been like very fun and silly and genuinely childish, you know? Yeah. But I think that's a beautiful thing.
It's uncertain and it's revealing itself to you, and that's what matters in a way.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. It's definitely completely uncertain, and it takes a lot of, you know, there's a huge amount of self-doubt there, but at the same time, there's kind of like a belligerence and a stubbornness that, you know, in fact, I can occupy space and in fact, I can claim time.
I mean, it's necessary, as much as you say that there's doubt there, there's a necessity to trust yourself and say yes, and what will happen next, and
yeah, when you say there's doubt in it, that's kind of at odds with the necessity of saying yes, what happens now?
Mm. The doubt is, I think, important in some ways, so long as it's a question. If doubt becomes a full stop, then that's a form of cruelty to yourself. Like, you have to keep asking yourself, well, like, okay, if there was something there, if there was a knot there, if there was a stoppage there, if that thing didn't work, well, how do we move around that? You know, how do we kind of flow? Like, a lot of the time I just use the image of water, that you have to move around the obstacle, that you have to keep flowing with it, and keep discovering what you can get to. And the sheer practicality of it is that it's all practice. And if you're working towards finding a moment of earnestness, you know, and you might hit that once or twice in a set, and you go, okay, there was something there that was worth being here for. And hopefully, I hope to be able to continue to work as a craft towards defining that a bit more, and making it a bit more worth people's time to listen. Yes, but like, as I said, it's a fundamentally a selfish practice that I feel like I'm involved in now. As much as I in an ideal space, you're enveloping people, you're bringing them in, and welcoming them into a space that you've kind of, like a song, like you're inviting them into your home generously, hopefully. But there's a lot of kind of trust going on.
Sure. I mean, like, you could argue that all art is self-indulgent, or, you know, when you say about it being an indulgence, like...
Well, yeah, I suppose I should catch myself on that a bit, because the idea of taking space or existing in a space, making sound that people can listen to, is, you know, that's optional for them to listen to it, but you existing is not necessarily optional. Well, you know, we're trying, you know, so to actually just comfortably invite people into a space and hold that is the challenge, I think, for me at the moment. So,
to my mind, improvisation is really essential for feeling presence, and it is about that uncertainty that keeps me concentrated and focused and alive within the situation, and not merely going through the motions of something pre-planned and pre-organized. Mm-hmm. Evidently that's something that you were seeking more of in your practice.
But I found through collaborations I was able to find moments of just completely escaping logic brain, you know, and just being completely embodied, present. And you'd find yourself leaving the stage with, like, basically no memory of what had just happened, but just knowing that you were entirely in that space, moving a part of, like, you know, a band structure, just like moving like a single organism. When you experience that, it's like, it is like a drug or something, you know, it's like, but it's also, it's just a lesson to yourself. You have to hold on to that moment and remind yourself that, like, that exists. So you can hope to access that kind of freedom of yourself again. So I suppose with improvisation, there's always the hope that if you do enough preparation, if you do enough, it's almost like you do have to construct the walls of the house in some way. And then you can come in and you can bounce off the walls and you can, you know, throw the furniture around or whatever. Yeah, the thing of not knowing what will happen next, I suppose, coming from such fixed structures of learning and fixed structures of composition, and I have nothing but respect for, you know, classical music and love, and, you know, I think the internal worlds that I got to see through learning that music was really pivotal in, like, showing me how to live. But just being present, really being present in your body and being present in the space and responding to what can come forward in those times, like, is really exciting, you know. And I suppose I'm never going to feel like I can play as well as I would like to play or whatever, but it's a really great challenge to yourself to kind of go, like, okay, you know, like, yeah, if I do actually get back into doing my skills every day and all this kind of thing, you know, maybe I can push a bit further and maybe I can get to the heart of something a bit more every time, maybe. Thank you.
I think being in front of a crowd changes our response to music as well. Like, I find that there's more physicality about what I do by virtue of being in front of people. Do you find that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it is electric when you like, I do feel like I'm a little bit quite spiritual about that space, and I do feel the just collective charge of people's attention is sheer magic. Like, it is actually just magic. You know, you can look at it as, you know, I'm obsessed with quantum theory, and you know, the science of attention is an incredible thing. And when you have a bunch of people breathing in sync, and you know their heartbeats are in sync, they're literally taking in the same information but from multiple different perspectives, and we're all sharing that moment, it's an incredibly, you know, it's what we're all
seeking.
But yeah, you know, it is connection. And I think fundamentally, especially coming out of lockdown, my heart was broken. I couldn't play music during lockdown, and I'd never realized how dependent I'd become on playing with other people until then, and I couldn't do it. It was devastating. And then coming out of lockdown, I was pieced together through, you know, invitations to projects. Yes. And like, it was genuinely like, I got a call from Aoife Nessa Francis to record on Protector. And that was literally the hand that pulled me out, you know, of the hole. She was just like, come improvise in studio. Just, she was so generous in that offer. And that generosity is like now just something that I live on, you know. It's like, and I find that in those improvising spaces, you know, it's people really letting themselves be incredibly vulnerable. Like, yeah, it's also fair play to audiences going to see people improvising, because who knows what's going to happen. But it's definitely fun.
I know from an audience perspective, part of the thrill is knowing that the person in front of you is in response and in dialogue with you in that way, and they're improvising, and it's being born in that moment. Like, that, it's a singular experience. That is part of the charm of seeing something like that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I have so much respect for people who can prepare things beforehand. You know, I really, really do. You know, I can't work a computer, so I had to try and figure out how to make all my sounds live. But actually, the physical discomforts and weirdnesses of moving around an instrument, especially something as large as a harp and as weird as a harp, you discover weird ways to play things or sides, you know, that that dictate a rhythm or dictate a emotion, and you can then respond to that further, you know. So,
I did interview a performance psychologist once about flow state. She was a professional violinist, and then she went and studied psychology and was really interested in the idea of flow state, and the same thing with like athletes being in the zone, that you run further or you stretch further by virtue of the performance, by virtue of the audience and the awareness of people watching. So yeah, when you mentioned like those moments of earnestness or realness, like, and you maybe only get one or two of them, and that's something that you're chasing, what does that feel like?
Honestly, like, I don't know. I don't know really how to describe that feeling, except for the fact that like, you're also not really present in yourself at all when that moment is happening. But there is an utter bliss in that second, or, you know, like, you've made it. Now all of the anxiety around playing is just like, will that happen? So that's, you know, really stressful. but then, yeah, no, if you're comfortable and you find that space, like, wow, yeah, that's completely magic. It's just like breathing in sync with everybody or something. It's always a tricky one.
Obviously, it depends on the context you find yourself in. And yeah, I spoke to a choir leader recently, and he talked about the collective heartbeat of the choir, and that's something I've been trying to think about a lot more. How is today? You performed today at Fain La Grena. Let's acknowledge where we are.
Yes.
How is that in terms of, you can hear the rattle of the shutters out, and you can hear people rocking out, and the walls are shaking with rocket. Yeah. Fain La Grena.
Fain La Grena is absolutely rocking the city. This is the most incredible festival I've ever experienced. I think for me, I'm a problematically emotional person, and the environments, it's like, you know, that you enter sometimes when you're playing gigs and stuff, are You know, and you're very vulnerable and you're very like hyped up, and you can come into spaces and realize that there's lots of scary problems that need to be figured out in order for you to get to the moment when you finally get to do the thing. And it's been like a mad few months of that kind of anxiety always, and especially when you're bringing the number of things that I like to bring around with me. But yeah, from the second, before I got into Limerick, it's like from the second of the invitation, it's just been entirely gorgeous. You know, you get enveloped in this kind, enthusiastic, just bubble of absolute grawl. Like they're all just, everyone involved is so full of love for what they're doing, and everybody wants to help make you have a better time. And I feel like that's, they're giving that energy to every single person here. And also just the quality of every musical experience I've had at this festival has been the best I've had. Like I think I fully, Katie Kim's set last night was genuinely one of the best experiences of my life. You know, yeah, fair play to everybody involved in Fail na Gréine. So, you know, you get invited to do something like that, and it's a real honor. You know,
that creates a space for you to trust yourself.
Yeah, yeah, and just have a wonderful time playing music. And for everybody who's here, you know, whether they're artists who are performing or artists who are here, like everybody here is valuing this experience so much. And they do, they literally hold you up, you know, they hold you up emotionally and they support you. And even just today, like I've never had the experience of arriving to a gig after my harp arrived. You know, the harp was there and ready to go, you know, and everyone was just like, all right, you can do the thing now. When I say that's never happened before, never. You know, they just looked after everything, so they're amazing.
What's ahead of you then? Let's talk about the future.
Yeah, future is tipping away at lots of things. I always fantasizing about getting closer to my instrument. You know, I think there's always the idea of, and then I'll do like several months in a mountain cottage and I'll come back and I'll be better. But I think the reality is that it's continue exploring. So a lot of that, as you said, with it happens in front of an audience. I'd love to figure out a way to perform more regularly in a kind of relaxed way with people. But, you know, Dublin is hard with spaces and it's really difficult to find anywhere to even rehearse, you know. So me in my bedroom rehearsing, imagining an audience is the state for now. But I'm doing a master's in contemporary art, so a lot of that is looking at spaces and how people are welcomed into spaces and performance art. So maybe weaving a bit more of that in and just kind of taking that perspective, I think, has been really helpful. But yeah, lots of collaborations. I get so giddy when I get to work with new people and see what I can offer them, what I can bring into their projects. And it helps me find entirely new ways of approaching the harp. And it has created a language for me that I feel like, yeah, I just have better access to understanding what the instrument can offer. And every album I've worked on, every band that I've worked with has given me, you know, has been a completely different approach. Yeah. So
do you surprise yourself then in that respect?
Yeah, like it surprises me that like I feel like I now have like done some things, you know, because I always feel like I'm very new here. wherever I am, I'm new here. I'm the new guy. I don't know what's happening.
It's my first day.
Yeah. So, but that with that comes like, you know, I'm just really grateful anytime anyone offers or asks or invites me to do something with them. So there's a few new projects I'm excited to work on and see what comes off. I'm doing some interpretive movement as part of a play next cool. month as well in Imma with the incredible Isadora Epstein, who I've been looking to collaborate with a few times this year. So we're working on a show. There'll be music of that. But yeah, I'm like on my kind of long time collaborations with Ethan S. Francis and Maya Sophia. Still going and growing, and that's, you know, I love both of those women so deeply. They're just amazing human beings and have shaped how I understand the world. But yeah, I think I'd love to maybe now look at doing some, actually just like maybe doing some recording, like maybe actually, but I'm approaching, I've hopefully maybe doing a live recorded performance as instead of a kind of album recording, because I think maybe catch a bit of that manic live thing. I also just, I don't know, maybe I'm really lazy. I just don't want to actually think about structure. I'll just let it happen and then I don't have to think about it. But no, I think maybe really doing some prep emotionally and physically and getting, I think as well, the thing that I really need to do, especially after so much outdoor time, like I feel like the summer's been full of outdoor time, harp, bringing harp places, here's harp. What I need to do is actually bring harp indoors. And what I say to a lot of like students as well is that like when you're working with an instrument, it is your primary collaborator, and you have to actually give your collaborator a lot of time and attention. And I'd love to give myself and the harp's relationship some TLC and really spend some time just syncing up and getting to know each other again. Yeah. after whacking it around in bands and venues, so that would be nice as well, some quiet time.
There's this thing burned into my brain from an interview I did when I was a young lad, and the artist in question said that to be successful as an artist, you have to be introverted enough to go off in a corner and create and dream up the thing, and then you have to be extroverted enough to go out in front of people and convince them to care about it. And as an artist, you are struggling between those two states of being the whole time. So yeah, the idea of bringing the harp indoors really makes me think about that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think it's a problem for a lot of us, because it's easy to kind of idealize the state of introversion, but actually like that can be fundamentally quite damaging sometimes as well, when you know, because if you too much quiet time isn't the best for any of us either. So I think finding a sense of community in music for me has been incredibly healing. So you know, whether that's, maybe that's why I'm do so many collaborations, because you know, it's hanging out with your friends and making sounds, and the sounds are kind of a side effect of all of the fun sparks of just being a human being and spending time together. And you find so many gorgeous things that you wouldn't find on your, well, I do, that I wouldn't find on my own when I'm working with people. And I think that's why when I look at historical music and old songs, that's what I'm finding, is old stories that I'm like, it's like you're hanging out with these theoretical kind of ghosts, but they really become real people through the songs and making contact with those. And like for me, like the set today was hugely, there's a lot of ghosts in my set, and I love them, they're my family. So connecting with those voices is a huge part of what motivates me. And you know, I'm definitely want to continue researching old songs and ballads and off the harp as well. Like there's a huge amount of work to do on reconnecting songs with the harp, because the harp traditionally, like way way back, was always voice and harp. And I've been playing wire strung harp for the last couple of months as well, and hoping to do more with that, and that's its own world of tradition. And
demystify that difference for me.
So wire strung harp, non-chromatic, metal strung, kind of the most basic physical structure of a harp you can imagine in comparison to what I play today, which is the pedal harp, which is full of crazy mechanics and gears and thingamawatsits that help you access any key and allow you to do, you know, beautiful Alice Coltrane freestyle and harmonic playing. So you have Alice Coltrane, and then you have wire strung harp, which is traditionally right hand melody, left hand mirroring the melody. It's very monophonic traditionally, and would have been often accompanied by either voice recitation or vocal song. And yeah, the wire strung harp is kind of, there's incredible work being done by Siobhan Armstrong, Dr. Siobhan Armstrong of the Historical Harp Society. The things that they're putting together from looking at basically x-rays of old harps, and everybody knows what the wire-strung harp looks like. It's on our coins. You know, that's the Trinity harp that we all recognize, the Brian Boru harp. But it's basically not being played, apart from very, very few wonderful players have kept it alive. But we're working from manuscripts to try and put together authentically how it would have sounded. Now, I'm sure I'm the worst person to be entering historical music practice, because the first thing I want to do is put a effects pedal on it. Yeah. and slap some strange, you know, contemporary harp techniques and see what happens then. But, you know, hopefully there's room for a bit of it all.
Of course. Yeah. I think that's really interesting that you're engaged with that tradition and curious about working within the limitation of that.
Mm. Oh yeah, it's wonderful. Well, like, creative limitation is what, like, I desperately need it. You know, it's like that thing of, you do need walls to bounce off, you know, and if somebody, you know, gives me a whole orchestra of instruments and says go, I'll go, oh dear, no, ah, I don't know what to do. But if you give me three notes and say, have at that, just go for it, you know, then you end up just smashing them into bits and having a great time, you know? It's like, again, child mode, if you overthink things. So I think creative constraint is wonderful. And for me, the stillness of the wire-strung harp was really healing when I was getting back into playing music after lockdown.
So, like, was there an extent to which you've devoted years of your life to this and studied from the age of 4 in some respects, and then prior to working with Aoife, you were in a bit of a fugue state or an uncertain state where you're sort of, things were gathering dust?
Well, I'd say, well, pre-lockdown, things were kind of taking off in lots of ways. Yeah. Like, you know, I remember we had this mad week, the week of lockdown. I played Vicar Street with Maya Sevilla when she was nominated for the Choice Music Prize. And then we played for the royal family that came over that week. And that was all in like 4 days. And then, like, by the end of the week, we were in lockdown. So, you know, there was a huge aspect of like, oh, we've got it now. We figured it out. Things are happening. Wow, this is like taking off. And then it was the most surreal drop off, you know. And then, like, you know, basically nobody saw each other either. So it was crazy. Yeah, and then during lockdown, I really struggled to play. And the wire strung harp really helped me find my way back. And songs, old songs, helped find... And I was living with my grandparents as a carer in County Monaghan in Castle Blaney. And I was singing songs with my nana, you know, when she had dementia and she was very unwell. And I was singing, like, silly songs with her that she remembered from her childhood, and singing songs for my granddad, and that was it. I was like, okay, that's a good thing in this time. There was very little good things in that time, but we could all sing songs. So there was that, and that was when I kind of had the fortune of finding Siobhan Armstrong online and renting a wire-strung harp. And when I was really intimidated by how many notes I would have to play so fast on the pedal harp, and just the pressure of like trying to ramp yourself up into learning something that will take you so long to kind of conceptualize and everything. It just, the pressure of it seems so much. And then to bring everything back to a very small, still space of very minute movements, but with such finesse and with like such honor in every note, that just restored my faith in everything. And it still does every time. I kind of like, the wire strung harp is there, and I every once in a while I'll be like, I can actually let myself play that, you know. And it's kind of, I really hope in the next few months to really lean into that. And I know that it's going to be a big part of my life. And I feel like there's a lot to be done there as well. And it's a really beautiful adventure that I'm excited about. So hopefully, yeah, maybe next time I'll be playing wire strung harp rather than pedal harp. You never know, but we'll see.
Thanks so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.